You're listening to Charlottesville's Podcasting Network with your host, Dan Gould. Virginia History with Rick Britton starts right now. Rick Britton is a local award-winning author, cartographer, and historian. You can find him online at rickbritton.com. Rick joins me in studio for our continuing series on Virginia's colorful 18th and 19th century history. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing very well this morning. Thank you. We got a little something new for our listeners starting with this episode. We're offering an ability for people to subscribe to these episodes. There'll be a link at the bottom of the post. And if you click it and fill in the information, which is just your email address, from that point onward, you will automatically get an email notification with the release of every new episode of Virginia History with Rick Britton.
That's fantastic. So let me get this right. If the listeners, if the downloaders, the podcast people, if they enjoy what we're doing, and hopefully they do, and they like listening, they can receive absolutely free of charge.
That's right.
A notice every time one of these gets posted to SevillePodcast.com. Is that right?
That's exactly right, Mike.
Okay, and we promise not to sell this list to any advertiser?
Yes, very good point.
That's important.
Very good point. Thank you for reminding me about that. We will maintain this list in the utmost of privacy, and we will not share it with any third parties, and we will not use it to spam you.
Okay, so what would this look like when they receive this in their email inbox? What will it look like?
It will look a little bit like what you see on the site when you go there. You'll see the text of the post and a link which you can click to listen to the podcast. So you can preview it in email, decide first whether that's a topic that you're interested in before you go off to the site to listen to it.
I see. So in the email box, they press a link, they go to SevillePodcast.com, and they can listen to one of our episodes, one of our shows.
Exactly right. Exactly.
Okay, is there a method for them also to comment? Because we want to get people to start commenting on perhaps ideas they have for future shows or things like that.
Sure, there sure is. There's two ways to comment. We're also going to provide, in addition to the comment box, which we've always had below the post, we're going to provide an email address starting with this episode where folks can write to us with ideas and suggestions and questions, even questions. We'll take the occasional question from
Fantastic.
People.
And maybe an occasional tomato they might want to throw our way.
That's right. Exactly. So that's all new starting with this episode.
Fantastic.
Great.
Fantastic.
All right. So, my friend, what are we going to talk about today?
Well, speaking about tomatoes, it's kind of a segue. I thought we would talk about cooking in the Civil War. Last time we talked about camping and we talked about marching in times past. The way this basically worked is the mess system. Not that they made a mess when they were cooking. I'm sure they did that too. But a mess in the army was a group of eight men. So out of eight men, they would gather together around eating time. And hopefully that would be two or three times a day. Oftentimes it was not. Oftentimes it was no time during a particular day. But they would get together and perform all the necessary duties. So out of the mess of eight, hopefully one guy hadn't thrown away the skillet. So he was carrying the skillet. Another gentleman had the coffee pot, you know, dangling off of his accoutrements, probably in the back of his belt. So they would pick the guy who was the best cook. That person would start manning the skillet. Somebody else would go off and chop wood. And if they had enough food to eat, they would put everything together and form some kind of soup or stew or something like that. If not, one guy would start off the skillet with the scant provisions that they had, and the other men would go out foraging. In the Southern armies, of course, the distribution of food was often bad, and there are these famous stories. The men were supposed to get bread. We'll talk about hardtack, either hard bread or soft bread. Bread, usually hardtack, some kind of meat, and usually that was pig, pork, a little bit of flour or meal. And the niceties, like a little bit of coffee, a little bit of sugar, some salt. But these things never came all at once. So there are these amazing stories about how, for example, there would be bread and they'd have no meat to go with the bread. So the meal is just bread. They would have another time they would have sugar. So everybody would get handed out sugar, but there'd be no coffee. At other times, they'd get handed coffee, but nobody had any sugar. Sugar wasn't passed out. And speaking of coffee, I just wanted to mention that this was one of the big times that the men, especially in the Southern Army, got into all kinds of coffee substitutes. And one of the favorites that's still around today is chicory. And chicory, believe it or not, is actually the bark of a tree. And when it's boiled, it has a flavor that's kind of akin to coffee. I've had it, and nowadays there's a brand, Louisiana Coffee, actually is flavored with chicory. It's real popular in the Deep South. I've tried it. To me, it's not all that close to real coffee, but they boiled other things too. They would boil the hulls of nuts, other kinds of barks, anything that would boil down and give them some kind of fluid that looked like coffee. When they were hard up for that coffee, they would do it. Now, if they, they're sitting around the skillet and they don't have enough to eat, but they've got some flour, one of the most popular things for the men, especially in the Southern Army, to make was koosh, or sometimes called slosh. So what they would do is, hopefully they had some bacon. Bacon was really important, and they would pan fry it in the skillet, so they've got a lot of the bacon grease. Then once the bottom of the pan is covered in the bacon grease, they would make the mixture of either the flour and water or meal and water, so they get a little bit of a paste. Pour that into the skillet till it covers the whole bottom. And once that's browned, of course, the cook, who's very adept with the use of the skillet, would flip that over, brown the other side, and then if some lucky man had a little bit of sugar in his pocket, they would sprinkle that across the top and divide that among the eight men, believe it or not, and that would be their meal. So basically what they've got is a large pancake or a large meal cake, sometimes called flapjacks or Johnny cakes when they're made out of flour, and they would pass that around.
It's a bit of a far cry. I was thinking when you were talking about these units of eight, that it's a bit of a far cry from when we might have dinner for eight.
Well, right.
I mean, here these guys are having what we would today call dinner for eight, but it's not really dinner for eight, is it?
Oh, no.
I mean,
no.
It's not a three-course meal. It's just the bare minimum.
It's whatever they've got. And yeah. We're going to talk a little bit more about that. And, it, you know, what's really common is to see the images of the soldiers in the Civil War, and the average man was so much thinner. Yeah. Than the average person today. And now this is why.
Now, you mentioned that sometimes they might not have all the supplies they need. They might have coffee, but not sugar, for right. example. But they might also not have firewood.
They might not have firewood. And then they're just going to go, probably, if they're lucky, find an orchard and eat all the apples that their stomachs can hold.
Right.
Yeah, anything that they can get their hands on. And, of course, foraging was really popular. When the government, when the army wasn't issuing enough, and men on both sides in the Union and Confederate armies went out foraging. And of course, the typical target is a hen house, not just for the eggs, but for the chickens themselves, you know, even the roosters, hogs and pigs. If they're running wild in the pen, those guys went after them. It was real common for the guys, and you can see this. It's kind of a pathetic image. You can see the guys at night from a nearby camp stopping at a farmhouse and knocking at the door, waiting outside until they can tell that the family is at the dinner table, and then knocking at the door and relying on the farmers in the neighborhood to feed the guys, because the army's not feeding them enough. In fact, historians have written that a large percentage of what the armies in the South ate was from the table of the poor farmers, not the wealthy farmers, the poor farmers. And this is why we often talk about when there was an army in a neighborhood, it kind of descended like a plague of locusts on the entire neighborhood, not just eating the food, but cutting down the wood, taking up the fences like we talked about before, just ravaging the entire neighborhood. Sometimes they were actually reduced to going into the cornfields, taking the corn and then just making parched corn and eating it off the cob. It was common to see an entire unit stopped on the side of the road, and they had a break dispersing over the fields and searching for blackberries or blueberries. And then after just a few minutes, when the officers call them back to the formation, these guys falling back with their mouths just dripping with the black or the blue juice because they've filled their mouths with everything they can grab. In the camps, and especially in the northern armies, when the government didn't issue enough food, a lot of the niceties of the things they had gotten used to in city life were supplied by the sutlers. And sutlers were businessmen issued licenses by the government to take wagon loads of goods, things that weren't provided, out into the camps and sell them. They weren't supposed to sell them at exorbitant prices. Sometimes they did, and the government had to step in and either throw them out of the camp or force them to sell at a reasonable price to the men.
You're talking about selling to the individual soldiers.
Selling to the individual soldiers.
Not to the army, but to the individual soldiers.
Yeah, selling to the soldiers
out of their,
individually.
Out of their own pockets.
Right, but selling their wares. And so this was a profitable business to fill up, stop in a city, fill up a wagon with the kinds of things that the army's not issuing, and then traveling out, getting a license and then traveling out to the army to an encampment. Some of the favorite items that the sutlers sold, the canning industry had only been around for about 10 years by the time of the Civil War. And so canned goods were really popular with the men. Of the different things that came in canned, the most favorite, bar none, was canned peaches. And canned peaches today are still really popular in that really sweet juice. Any kind, as you can imagine, any kind of tobacco product, the guys would just descend on the sutlers and, buy out their entire stock. So cigars, and in the South, it was actually spelt a little bit differently. Cigars in the South were spelt S-E-G-A-R and pronounced cigars with the emphasis on the first syllable. So cigars, pipe tobacco, chewing tobacco in those little squares, and the guys would go around and offer a chaw, as they say in the South, to one of their buddies or one of their pards. Even the finely chopped up tobacco and the rolling papers for cigarettes. Cigarettes became popular during the Crimean War in the mid-1850s, and they were really popular among the French. It kind of caught on among the French soldiers in the Crimean War. And then so in the cities, the men started getting into smoking cigarettes. It hadn't caught hold like it is, like it did by the middle of the 20th century, but men were already smoking cigarettes. Now, the most commonly issued bread at the time was hardtack, and hardtack was really a cracker. It's about 3 inches on a side, so 9 square inches, kind of thick. And there's some famous stories that I wanted to tell you about hardtack. There was one when the armies, when the Northern Army was first formed in Washington, D.C., the men streamed in from all the northern states to defend the federal capital, and they started passing out hardtack. They noticed that one of the boxes that they were receiving out of the wagon was stamped 1812. So this is hardtack that had been in a warehouse since the previous war. you know, all those years before. It was oftentimes common to get a box of hardtack distributed to the men that had been sitting around, and the worms had gotten to it, and it was really wormy. And so there was a common story in the Army that you could cut your hardtack or break your hardtack in two, and it would crawl in two different directions. The men would take the hardtack oftentimes because it was too hard to eat by itself, bust it up with the blunt end of a bayonet, and put it into that bacon grease as it was frying, and that would kind of soften it up. And then you'd eat the whole concoction of bits of bacon and bits of hardtack, almost like some kind of soup or something with dumplings in it. Although they, I don't want to give the impression that they got that the hardtack got that soft.
So hardtack is a, it's a bread product.
Hardtack is a cracker.
Oh, it's
a cracker. It's a hard cracker that sometimes got too hard to even eat. So we had to bust that thing up.
But I guess it lasts for a long time. That's the idea, huh?
That's the thing. It lasted for 50, 60 years sometimes. And they'd hand it out. Sometimes, of course, things got really hard in the armies. And, of course, men oftentimes went out hunting and people ate rats. And there's a famous story in the 19th Virginia Infantry that I want to relate. They moved into a new camp. This is during the siege of Richmond and Petersburg over the winter of 1864. The 19th Virginia Infantry was formed in Albemarle and Charlottesville. And the men moved into a camp that had been vacated by another brigade. And when they moved in, they noticed that there was a large cat that was wandering around the camp. And as times got tough, the men decided, they voted, and they decided they were going to go ahead and cook that cat. The cat looked kind of fat. I guess it had been a favorite of the previous brigade. So they skinned it. They killed it, skinned it, and prepared it to put it into a large kettle to cook, and they started boiling it. Well, they boiled it all one day, and then as they tried to get the fork into it the next day, it still wasn't tender, so they boiled it another day. And in the meantime, they're waiting, and so they're playing some cards around the campfire. And in the next morning, they boiled it all that night, too. They finally decided, you know, we've boiled this cat enough. We need to try to eat this thing. And so they took it out, and they gave the captain of the company the honor of carving up this newly boiled cat for the men to eat, this mess to eat. And the captain immediately complained that his knife wasn't hard enough to cut into this cat. And try as they would, they could not cut it. And it became famous in the 19th Virginia Infantry as the cat that would not boil.
That's excellent.
And the dinner was wasted.
And with that, I think we'll close for today.
All right.
As always, thank you for stopping by.
And thanks for having me.
We'll see you next time.
Yep.
Join us each second and fourth Sunday for Virginia History with Rick Britton. For the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, I'm Dan Gould.